The appearance in this world of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, who appeared in this world at 3:30 p.m. on the 6th of February, 1874, the fifth day of the dark lunar fortnight, Krishna Paksha, in the month of Govinda of the Gaurya Vaishnava calendar, although at that time it wasn't known as such. It was later that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur delineated the Vaishnava names for the months. He, Saraswati Thakur, appeared in Puri, one of India's holiest places, and the site of the famous temple of Lord Jagannath, where Lord Chaitanya had resided for 18 years, absorbed in the highest ecstasies of Krishna consciousness. Today is a very special day for the whole universe. Most of the universe doesn't realize it. There are many who do. Sujanarbuda Radita Pada Yugam. His two lotus feet are worshipped by hundreds of millions of highly saintly people. In the world at the present time, there are not hundreds of millions of highly saintly people. At least they haven't been recognized or developed as such as yet. It's a special day for the whole universe. It's a special day especially for his followers. It's a special day, especially for me, because I had the mercy to compile a book about him. Bhakti indicates purity. That was one of the great contributions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he established that bhakti indicates or means purity, and Siddhanta indicates intelligence. Siddhanta. Saraswati means intelligence. And although my level of purity of bhakti and of intelligence, obviously, there's no need for false eulogies here, but it's obviously doesn't come anywhere close to that of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I had the mercy, which is another feature of bhakti and of bhakti siddhanta. I had the mercy of he who is Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigraha, the very form of the mercy potency of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I had the mercy to compile that book, which even myself, when I read it, I am so amazed, because it's not me, it's him manifesting. I had the mercy to compile that as Ganga is offered to Ganga. Just like a child goes to the Ganga with his father and offers some water, taking water from the Ganga, offers to Ganga. The child doesn't know what he's doing, but he has the same effect. He's doing the right thing. So in this way, childishly, I had the opportunity to compile that book, which will no doubt be being quoted much today, at least in ISKCON centers around the world. Unfortunately, that book doesn't seem to have gained much traction or credence with those followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who are not in ISKCON, who are in various branches of the Gaudiya Math. Bhaktisiddhanta is his name, not at birth. And of course, no one has a name exactly at birth, but generally not. That name was the name Siddhanta Saraswati, was ironically, or maybe in retrospect, strangely conferred on him for his early achievements in Jyotish Shastra, which comprises astronomy and astrology. The two are not separate in Vedic culture. They're pursued as one study. Some emphasize more than the other. And of course, astrology cannot be done without astronomy. So he was given that name by astronomers, and he brought the name to fruition and perfection with bhakti at the beginning, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So Bhakti Siddhanta is a name, and Bhakti Siddhanta is a concept. It's not a thing, a tangible thing. It's not a quantifiable thing. It's an abstract concept, actually two abstract concepts. Bhakti. What is bhakti? There are many definitions of what is bhakti. We as followers of Rupa Goswami, Sri Rupa Anuga Bhakti, he is the one who gave Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is the one who gives bhakti, following the line of Srila Rupa Goswami. So especially we emphasize the Bhagavatam conclusion as summarized by Srila Rupa Goswami, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Kamadhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktirutama. The highest bhakti is that which is conducted without any personal desire, either for material progress or for desires for intellectual progress leading to impersonalism, impersonal realization, but is simply practiced for the pleasure of Krishna, as Krishna wants. So this is it's a concept, if you will. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as does any guru, must reify this concept of Bhaktisiddhanta, which is a combination of bhakti and siddhanta, which are two concepts. Reify means he embodies it. He is Bhakti Siddhanta. He lives it. Bhakti Siddhanta is a name, is a concept, and also a reality, or more precisely, it is reality. Those who search for reality, what is real, they try to do so generally through philosophical methods, seekers of the truth. They try to understand with their mind what it is. They try to come to Siddhanta, a conclusion about what it is. Bhakti Siddhanta is the ultimate, it is reality. When we say ultimate reality, well, is there half reality? Yeah, the material world is also real, but in one sense, although the Vaishnavas reject Shankaracharya's claim, jagan mithya, that this world is false, to some extent, it's true. It's not the it is the truth, but it's not the whole. This material world is not the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is not the absolute reality. Bhakti is the ultimate reality, and Bhakti Siddhanta is the ultimate reality, because Bhakti is inseparable from Siddhanta. To give a some kind of example. Krishna is the ultimate truth, eternally, absolute truth. But also eternal and conveying that truth are the Vedas. Both exist eternally. The Vedas shine the light of the truth on the truth. To understand the Vedas requires to understand the proper Siddhanta. So, Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vedanta, they have the same meaning, but just from a slightly different perspective. Those who seek reality, they try to understand through Siddhanta. But the highest Siddhanta is that beyond Siddhanta is love. This means Vraja Prem. In the land where there is no discussion of philosophy per se, as is considered by philosophers. So Bhakti Siddhanta. Siddhanta is meant to lead to bhakti. The highest Siddhanta is that beyond Siddhanta is love. So ultimately Bhakti Siddhanta is about love. And what am I saying? Am I talking about the concept? Love is a concept. So Bhakti Siddhanta, is it the concept? But the person also is about love. Love is sweet, especially that love which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give through Rupa Goswami, Madhuryojvala Premardha. It's a very sweet love. When we think of Bhakti Siddhanta, we think of the concept, it's already there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Siddhanta Virudha or Rasa Bhas, Shunile Prabhur Chite Nahoyulash. The term Bhakti Siddhanta comes up several times in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. The term comes up several times in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. That concept is ultimately the person. When we think of Bhakti Siddhanta, we think of it as a concept, but it's the name of a person, and it is a specific person. We think, generally, Gauriya Vaishnavas outside of the line of Bhakti Siddhanta, so they may think of Bhakti Siddhanta, that's a term in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, most of them don't think of it at all, which is why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had to come. But when we think of Bhakti Siddhanta, because we are sheltered at his lotus feet, we tend to think first, when we hear the term Bhakti Siddhanta, we tend to think of the person. What person could have such a name? Who can live up to that? Who is full of the sweetness of bhakti and the correctness of Siddhanta? Both are there. There's neither anything lacking in the sweetness and the love. It's absolutely full of bhakti and sweetness, but also completely full, nothing lacking, absolutely clear Siddhanta. Who could have such a name? Who can live up to such a name? And factually, when we consider the personality of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, we can read about that personality, that person in Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav and other writings, seems like a very formidable person, very hard to approach. We might be very afraid to come near him, as his opponents, especially, they became afraid of him and even of his followers. We might not want to come close. When we think of Srila Prabhupada, our own Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, we think, yes, I want to be with him. But we might think twice if we think, I have to be with Bhaktisiddhanta Sasari, because he seems to be a very uncompromising person, demanding total surrender with no excuses. We conceptually might prefer bhakti, the sweetness and love of bhakti without the Siddhanta. And there's all the Siddhanta. Siddhanta means you have to surrender to Krishna just every second. No excuses. Not even a slight modulation within the mind toward anything, but intense love of Krishna. This is bhakti Siddhanta. It sounds hard, doesn't it? And after all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give Harinam. It's a lot easier just to chant Hare Krishna without having to worry about all this surrendering, becoming pure. But this desiring or pretending to have or even aspiring for the love and sweetness of bhakti without accepting the Siddhanta is a cheating mentality. They're inseparable. If you want to accept Krishna without accepting his instructions, Savadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja, it's a kind of cheating. If you want to talk about Krishna without accepting his description of himself, matah parataram nanyat kinchid asti dananjaya, there's no truth higher than me, then it's a kind of cheating mentality, and it is this cheating mentality that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came to destroy. It was as if destroying bhakti, this cheating mentality. Bhakti cannot be destroyed. There's no question of bhakti being destroyed. But the false manifestations of love and sweetness without regard for rupanuga bhakti, following the rules and regulations as given by Rupa Goswami and his followers, indulging in sense gratification, then we don't get the actual love and sweetness of bhakti. In the name of bhakti, we get a false love and sweetness, which is the whole condition of the material world. Why, as Srila Prabhupada explains in his preamble to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, translated and presented as the Nectar of Devotion, that why do people work hard in this material world? Why do we do anything? Because we are looking for some rasa. Ultimately, we're looking for love. Srila Prabhupada uses this word several times. He expands on this concept of love. Everyone is looking for love. But that's in Krishna. And the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is meant to lead us to that love, that rasa, of love of Krishna. But it is different from the material rasa that people get. They love their family, so they work hard. But that is the perverted reflection of the real bhakti, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, which is reality. Now it is real. The love and sweetness of this material world, it is real, but it is real yatha bhasho yatha tamaha. like the reflection within darkness. We can't say the reflection isn't real, but it's not a substantial reality. So the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one of his major tasks, or that for which he is widely remembered and glorified properly, is that he came to give, to describe what is actual bhakti according to Siddhanta, to delineate it, that you cannot have the love and sweetness without proper understanding and proper following. And people say, well, we just want bhakti. We're just going for bhakti. Love, love of Krishna. Yeah, we love Krishna. But if you love Krishna, then you have to do what Krishna says. So they will criticize that, you know, we want bhakti. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, he will agree. Everything he's doing and saying is meant for bhakti. Krishna bhakti, Radha Krishna bhakti. It's all meant for that. And the name bhakti comes before Siddhanta. Siddhanta is an adjunct of bhakti. Not that, well, they're two completely interlinked. If we have bhakti without Siddhanta, as apparently do the Vrajavasis, that is the highest bhakti. But in this material world where we lack Siddhanta, we lack proper understanding, if we try to go up to the love of the level of the Vrajavasis, then we'll fail without proper understanding. We don't know the proper path. So bhakti comes before Siddhanta. But in this material world, bhakti has to be bhakti is the aim and object. But it has to be approached through Siddhanta. And his critics would criticize, oh, you're just a philosopher, a jnani, there's no bhakti. But he had to establish that. If you want bhakti, then you have to understand, accept, and follow this Siddhanta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to liberally give love of Krishna, but that because it had been misrepresented by persons who claimed to be his followers, it was the same, they were giving something, love and sweetness, which they represented as being that which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. But due to their lack of Siddhanta, their lack of surrender, their lack of genuine bhakti, their lack of desire to follow Siddhanta, then what they were actually giving was something mundane. And so it had become harder to access what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give due to the misrepresentation of it. Shruti Smriti Purana Adi Pancharatra Vidhing Vina Aikantaki Hare Bhakti Utpate Yaiva Kalpate. Because that which was being represented as pure devotional service, even though the pure devotional service, that term didn't come. That delineation between what is actual devotional service or pure devotional service and misrepresentations of it. It wasn't there. People were doing bhakti, they thought. But they made, the misrepresenters made it more difficult to access the actual bhakti given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of their misrepresentation of it. They simply made a disturbance in the path of bhakti. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was so strong. And people say, well, why are you so strong? Why aren't you being loving and sweet? Bhakti is all about love and sweetness. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was not wrong. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu certainly was full of love and sweetness, but he was Vajradapi Kotorani. Kusamat Api Komal. He was, as any great personality, Ramachandra before him, he was hard as a thunderbolt as well as being soft as a flower. Because being hard is also required within this material world. If we simply give softness and try and be loving and sweet without excising the upper siddhantas or the misrepresentations of what it means to be loving and sweet, then simply we nourish, we further propagate that which leads us away from Krishna. Even though it's represented as bhakti, it leads us away from Krishna. So he is, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Madhuryojvala Premardhya Shirupa Noga Bhaktida. He's full of the topmost, sweetest, most resplendent love and sweetness. But what was I saying about him being formidable personality? Yes, that is true. But it's also true that he was the most loving and sweet personality. And it cannot be otherwise. Otherwise, he wouldn't be a follower. The Siddhanta, it's not just some set of formulae, but it manifests in bhakti. It manifests in Bhakti Siddhanta. If he had been so tough and hard and heavy, if he had been devoid of any love or sweetness, like some kind of Stalin, people followed Stalin out of fear. But thousands of young men came to follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur with no coercion. There was no question of coercion, of physical or political or even social coercion. They gave their love to him because they were attracted by the philosophy, no doubt. But they felt the reality of it, the current of love from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Rupa Goswami, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, that resonated in their hearts. No doubt, many of them came being attracted by the philosophy, not that they were just some sentimentalists. If they were just sentimentalists, they would have never come to him, because there are already plenty of sentimentalists in the world, in Bengal particularly at that time. But many of the people who came to him were young, highly educated men with very bright prospects in the world. It was an exciting time in the world where new vistas were opening up, the traditional society had changed a lot. Even the very fact that many of these young men were educated in English was a new phenomenon which was changing society and opening up the world, their world, to all kinds of possibilities for material advancement. They had been sent to the secular schools for education. They were the hopes of their families. It's very difficult to break the bondage of family attachment and family pressure, especially in India, even up to the present time. What to speak of that time? And what to speak of that most of his followers were from Bengali families and Bengali mothers. It's like a cornerstone of Bengali culture. Bengali mothers up to the present time are known for the lavish, doting affection upon their sons, especially, and again, more so at that time even, because It was a more traditional society at that time. But coming out from their bright material prospects, coming out from, and their, many of them were also followers of the nationalist movement, independence movement of India, coming out from that, coming out from the crying and the embraces of their mothers, they left everything to go to him. It would not be possible on the strength of philosophy alone. It was possible due to the actual experienced love and sweetness that he imparted. No one comes, even to Krishna consciousness at the present time, no one comes due to philosophy alone. I've heard cases about people in, more than one case, in various parts of the world who are very impressed by the philosophy that they read in the books. And they come to the temple and they go, "No, no, it's not real." When I first read one of Srila Prabhupada's books, I wasn't living in a temple, or I'd never been to any temple. I thought, well, this sounds great, but I need guidance, and I can't get ahead by myself. I need something like a guru. But let's go and visit and see if it's true, if they're actually living up to the books. If they are, I'll join them. But I was doubtful. I wasn't going to join just on the strength of the philosophy. Whatever little I'd understood from the first reading of one of Srila Prabhupada's books, understood, this is great. This is what I'm looking for. But I wasn't going to join another sham organization, because I'd seen Christianity. The teachings of Jesus are wonderful, but the church, I was raised in that. I have more respect now than I had at that time. But anyway, the point is there. People, they're not going to join on the basis of philosophy. They need to live it and experience it. Paradoxically, even Buddha and later Shankaracharya, they taught the non-existence of personality or the non-existence of individual personality, respectively. In other words, they denied the very existence of love and sweetness being a reality. Buddha Dev denies the existence of the soul, so if there's no soul, there's no emotions, there's no love, and there's no sweetness. And Shankara denies the existence of plurality of souls, but love is to be shared between souls. So both of them, philosophically, they deny transcendental love and sweetness, and they decry the love and sweetness of this world as that which binds us in this world, which is true, and we agree, we accept that. But we go beyond their negativity and go up to the transcendental love and sweetness. But they don't accept this at all. But they also would have not been able to propagate their teachings if it wasn't for their personality. No one could have become a Buddhist just by reading some rock inscriptions about Buddha's teachings. Even today, stories of the Buddha, famous stories, and of the bodhisattvas prior to him, these stories convey his teachings to the masses of Buddhists. And they're far better known than, and endear people to Buddhism and to the personality of Buddha, which theoretically doesn't exist. If it did exist, it should have stopped existing if he reached nirvana, and if he didn't, then who else is going to reach it? But and people worship him, and yeah, the stories about him, the personality, and are far better known than the highly complex philosophy that developed after Buddhadev passed away from this world to attempt to justify his teachings or to explain it in various ways. It's extremely complex. I presume that it's impossible for anyone to have a good grasp. I may be wrong. There may be someone who has a good grasp on all the different, well, there are so many, all the different teachings of different Buddhist teachers in different schools. It's highly complex, but that highly complex philosophy is not what attracts people to Buddhism, although you could say in a very real sense, although in Buddhism there's nothing real, but okay, all right, let's not get into that. It's the philosophy that in and of itself, it doesn't attract people's hearts to give their life to follow it. And even if people are attracted by that, they want to see, has anyone ever done it? Is it possible to live like this? Actually, Buddha's, his own personal teachings, what we know of, they were basically very simple. Moral teachings, you can say, right action, right thought, right understanding. Anyone can understand this, and it's attractive. But who would have become inspired to aim for such a difficult and counterintuitive goal as becoming completely desireless? Negation of personality, which seems the most obvious thing, is that we are all persons. Who would have become inspired to dedicate their life to try to attain such a uninspiring goal as to become non-existent? And again, I'm just using words, and Buddhists will criticize me for what I'm saying, but they have to use similar kind of words because their philosophical teachings require it. Who would have become inspired, and such a difficult process, especially the original Buddhism, as it was known in this world. Later came Mahayana, where the whole concept of mercy and everything became underscored greatly. But who would have become inspired to follow such a difficult process, to get such maybe it's just personally speaking, but it seems like such an uninspiring aim as to become personalityless. Who would have dedicated their life to that unless they're inspired by the personality of Buddhadev? So similarly, I should just say one more thing about Buddhadev. Unless he'd shown actual love and compassion for his followers, which ultimately he negates, that there's no such thing as love and compassion or followers, then why, and of course in Mahayana Buddhism they emphasize this so much, the compassion, by who, for who, what it is, it doesn't fit with the philosophy. But anyway, unless he had actually had that love, and unless the people following him felt it, why would they have come to him? Why would they have stayed with him? Well, you may say, well, what about all these people that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur criticized. They talk about love and sweetness, and they have followers. Yes, that's true. Do they actually have love and sweetness? Patently, we have to understand through the Bhaktisiddhanta that by their material activities, which are gross, were gross in many cases, it is clear that they're not on the actual platform of love and sweetness. Therefore, bhakti siddhanta is needed. They're not actually on the platform of love and sweetness if they're still engaging in mundane activities. So similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he brought love. It was already there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, but had become obfuscated to a large extent. What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, Nityananda came to give, that had become largely obfuscated, not just obfuscated or covered over, but misrepresented. So if someone heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he'd grown up hearing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had such a wrong idea about it, talking conventionally here, from what he'd learned from his English education, that he felt repulsed by it. That was one of the major points of the English education, or maybe the central point. They wanted young, intelligent men who had become the proteges of the British to become disgusted with their own religion. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt that. But then, by divine arrangement, when he became attracted to wanting to understand about the personality of Chaitanya Dev, because so many people in Bengal, although they criticized the Vaishnavas, they still had great regard for Chaitanya Dev himself. Although some also criticize Chaitanya Dev himself. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur became eager to find out more about Chaitanya Dev and his teachings. And then he, having done that, then he wanted to find a guide, a guru, hard to find. And ultimately the person he approached for Diksha, he became disappointed with that person also. That's a controversial point, no doubt. But the point I'm making here is that the upper sampradayas, or the misrepresentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love and sweetness, had become so prominent that it was hard to find the actual love and sweetness which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came to give again that love and sweetness, to again open the floodgates that Nityananda Prabhu had brought by cutting a canal from the ocean of love. Abhadha Karuna Sindhu Nitai Katiya Muhan. He Gare Gare Bhule Prem. He went, Nityananda Prabhu cut a canal from the unlimited ocean of love of Krishna, and then went door to door, bringing that Amiyar Ban, a flood of nectar of love of Krishna. So that had again become blocked, as Srila Prabhupada noted in one of those poems which he composed. I can't remember, it was either Vaishishtashtashtakam or Virahashtakam. He noted that it, the caste Goswamis and others had blocked the flow of, then they blocked the canal, blocked with a lock. So maybe just a little water. If you see the locks, at least I used to live next to the Grand Trunk Canal or something. I can't remember the name. in England, which links London, the waterway, London with Birmingham. I'm trying to think of the name, Grand something canal. And so there were what you might call primitive wooden locks in which the water is blocked, but some gets through. So it's maybe something was getting, some of the love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is getting through, but not the flood. And then when the lock gate is opened, what a shower, a tremendous force. When the lock gate is opened, a tremendous force of water comes into the lock. Unless you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, maybe it's not such a good analogy for most people, but because that term is used, canal, and blocking the flow, that came to my mind. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he opened again the floodgates of love of Krishna, of and not the love and with his own personal love and compassion. He was a formidable, if you see only the Siddhanta. But if you see the bhakti, which is inseparable from Siddhanta, then he had so much love and sweetness. But he refused to accede to the sentimental, cheating propensity of those who wanted to approach him only directly as bhakti, in the bhakti feature, without accessing the Siddhanta part, which he came to give. Which he was following Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's another major theme of his whole existence, is that he's fully made of Bhaktivinoda. Because as Bhaktivinoda Thakur has had one, Najai Brikopari, Tane Tane Fal Dhare, Dhare, Dushta Fal Karibe Arjan. If one tries to climb up the tree without climbing up the tree, Najai Brikopari, and if one simply wants to pull down the fruits from the ground, you'll get the rotten fruits. Referring to those who, without going up, becoming purified, they want to go up to the level of prema bhakti. They'll only get the rotten fruits by pulling on the tree. Then again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that, what did he say? What is it? Siddhadeha bhave. I'm just not remembering now. Siddhadeha bhave. Viparita phala janme. Shaktira bhave. Just the first words of that saying of Bhaktivinoda Thakur I'm missing. Adhika, they're very important. Adhika na labhya siddhadeha bhave. Viparja buddhi janme. Shaktira bhave. Without becoming properly qualified, if one tries to meditate upon his position within Raja Lila, then he'll get an opposite result. His instead of his consciousness becoming purified, it will become more contaminated due to lack of strength, spiritual strength. So as our own Srila Prabhupada emphasized to us again and again and again and again, spiritual strength comes from following the regulative principles. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stressed this, the need to follow principles and not just be sentimental. We have to surrender to Krishna. Our own Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, emphasized this again and again, knowing that it's so easy for us to cheat. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur often in his teachings, although they're very complex philosophical presentations, but he often also used Bengali sayings and folk stories to illustrate his points, to make it easy to understand, to illustrate the complex teachings, which he had. Ultimately they're very simple, but he got very deeply into the nuances of it, therefore Bhakti Siddhanta. So one example he gave was cheating the blacksmith by supplying poor quality iron. In traditional village is in India, where the judge money system is going on, there's the village blacksmith. And you, if you want something made, just like you want some farming implement made or kitchen utensil made, you have to supply the blacksmith with iron and he will make it for you. But this example is, if you give the blacksmith poor quality iron and then he makes what you want, a plow or something, and then the first time you use the plow breaks and you blame the blacksmith. But the blacksmith is not to be blamed. You have tried to cheat him and you're thinking you're going to get a first-class utensil by supplying poor quality iron. It doesn't work. You have to do your part also. And in fact, the blacksmith, he may, due to some kind of social pressure, accept the poor quality iron. But he'll tell you, actually, the proper blacksmith will tell you, I'm obliged, due to my duty, to make something if you ask me to, having given me the iron. But I'm telling you right now that this isn't going to work. You need the proper, for making good utensils, you need good implements, you need good quality iron or steel or whatever. So in the same way, if we think that, well, I won't follow everything, I won't come to the proper level of purity required, and still I'm going to get the full gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we're just cheating ourselves. We won't get it. And the duty of the guru is to tell us that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in the tradition of all great spiritual teachers, he attracted people by his love. Actually, there have been spiritual teachers who they attracted people by their just by being nasty and rebels and very critical. I'm thinking of Martin Luther, and later Calvin, who was doesn't seem to be a very loving person. And that also is going on at the present time, where we have just like Ritvik Vadis are always, all they can do is criticize others, and they also get followers. So that's also that's the, instead of the love and compassion, they give it something opposite. It's just the opposite of what Christ came to give or what Prabhupada came to give, just hatred of others. But yeah, just as so I was saying, Buddha, Shankara, paradoxically or contradictorily, they attracted people to their teachings of non-personality by their own very personality. They attracted people to their teachings of getting free from bondage by bringing people in, attracting them with a bondage, you can say, of the attraction of their own personality. Whereas Bhakti Siddhanta came to teach the Bhakti Siddhanta, the truth that, yes, bondage in this material world is to be got free from, but beyond that is to enter the bondage of love. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in this world in 1874 by the Christian calendar. That's what, 145 years ago. Bhaktisiddhanta appeared, but Bhaktisiddhanta didn't appear. What? Bhaktisiddhanta is an eternally existing principle. It's always existing. But it wasn't there. It was there and not there. Just like Krishna appeared in this world, some 5,000 plus years ago. But he was already there. In one sense, he doesn't appear because he's already there, but he becomes visible to the eyes of people in this world. So in the same way, Bhakti Siddhanta was there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had brought it. Even if he hadn't brought it, Bhakti Siddhanta is eternally existence in the hearts of all living beings. It's the innate position of everyone, every living being, to love Krishna and to accept themselves as their eternal servant. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came to ignite that Bhakti Siddhanta, which was there, but not, he became visible, he appeared in this world to make Bhakti Siddhanta appear in this world. This whole world is suffering. Why? Due to lack of bhakti, love, and siddhanta, proper intelligence and proper understanding. So he was a person of immense intelligence, clear understanding, and tremendous love. And his intelligence, his understanding, his love, just on a different platform to that of we poor souls who out of his mercy he picked up. So he appeared in this world, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared in this world, but in another sense Bhaktisiddhanta didn't appear, it's already there, but he made it appear. It was not apparent to us that we are meant for Bhaktisiddhanta. He again revealed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Bhakti Siddhanta, which had become covered. He's all about sweetness and love, ultimately, but not cheap. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Shivarsha Bhanavi Devi Dayataya Kripadaya Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhurya Jvala Premardhashi Rupa Noga Bhakti Dashi Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namastute Namaste Gauravarni Shri Murti Dina Tarine Rupanoga virudhapa siddhanta dvanta arne vancha kalpa tarubhya sharki pasindhya patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha dante nitaya churakam padayane patya kritva chakaka shatameta nam pravi he sadhava sakala eva vihaya durang gauranga chandra charne kura.